You're tuned into the audio channel from scorenotes.com. Enjoy the show.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to scorenotes.com. We're delighted to have with us today the composer of the new Harry Potter film, Nicholas Hooper. Nick, how are you?
I'm fine. Very well, indeed.
Can you tell us a little bit about how you first became involved with the scoring duties on Harry Potter 5?
David Yates, who's the director, is someone I've worked for many years and done most of his scores. And when he took on Harry Potter, he wanted to use me as the composer. So he asked if he could do so, and we had to go through quite a long process of giving them demos, showing them music, and gradually persuaded them that it would be a good idea. And finally, after a couple of months, we got the go-ahead, and off we went. Started scoring.
Were you a fan of the novels and or the film series before you were brought on board?
Well, oddly enough, I was, yes. I read the first Harry Potter shortly after it came out and was completely hooked. I've been a fan ever since. When I met my wife, I discovered she was a fan, and that pulled us together a bit. It's just they are wonderful books, amazing sort of themes which go quite deep, really. Although they seem like children's books, I think they're actually far more interesting and serious than a lot of adult books.
Yes, there seems to be almost an even fan base between children and adults who have picked up on the series. Well, how difficult was it for you personally to pick up the series in a fifth installment?
It could have been difficult, but because of David's help and the fact that he so much knew the kind of music he'd want, that made a huge difference. Following John Williams is always a kind of a bit forbidding, really, because he is such a great composer. But at least I had his theme to work with, which I enjoyed doing too. And I think just working from the base of working with David as well, and the fact that I knew the book so well, I had a lot going for it, really.
As far as the themes themselves, what can fans expect from the music direction in Order of the Phoenix? Will all the famous Potter themes be returning?
The most famous one will return, which is the Hedwig theme. I use that at the front of the film where you'd expect it, and then at a lot of the important dramatic points it appears, often almost disguised. You just hear it coming in. Otherwise, I have to say the music will be different. The mood of the film is darker. There are some very strong characters like Umbridge, who comes in, Professor Umbridge, and she has her own theme, which pervades a lot of the movie. There is the business of the possession of Harry by Voldemort gradually through the film, and that has its own theme, which again is very different. Think of other ones. The recruits of the Dumbledore's army, they have their own theme. So the music is different, but then I think the film is different. So, you know, it goes with it, really.
Yeah, and I would have to say it's rather critical at a point in a film franchise where the music does have to be original and different than what was previously existing beforehand.
Yeah, well, in a sense, I couldn't really help that, because I'm not very good at writing other people's music.
Surely, and I guess that's kind of the double-edged sword when you get involved with an existing franchise.
Yes, although what I would say is not the same as many franchises in the fact that the books develop. So it's not like, you know, this is a sequel to something everybody's heard before. In a sense, you'd expect things to grow up and develop and change, and not that it's, you know, more grown-up than John Williams' music. But you know what I mean? That the books are changing, so the films will change. It's a very different feeling, I think, from, say, you know, Batman 4.
Sure. Now, going into a film like this, it is kind of a blockbuster status as far as films go. Mm. Did you have a personal strategy on how to manage the expectations going into this, be it personal expectations, fans' expectations?
Yes. Well, I thought I did. I mean, my plan, our plan, was to write a lot of music early on, get into it very early, get a wonderful musical structure that was all working. But things being as they are, the film changed shape, and the music grew and changed shape with it. So in the end, it was quite a rush, the finishing post, I have to say. That actually, it had an effect on me producing some of my best music, funny enough, because I tend to produce well under stress. it was stressful. But the strategy, I think I could have done with a bit more of a strategy. Very fortunate, really. I had a great team. I think that was one of the important things that I would state, you know, that I had a team of orchestrators who transferred my MIDI files into music. I had, for the first time, an assistant who sort of looked after all the technical aspects. Fantastic orchestra, just support all the way from the producers and the director and everybody. So that was the best strategy of all, I think.
I would say that's probably the best strategy for any successful type of movie, is to have everyone on the same page.
Absolutely. We had no trouble in the sense of, you know, people interfering and trying to make us go in different directions. Everybody was on board, everybody knew what was going on, were kept in the picture, and we had nothing but support as a result. And I think that's partly down to David Yates, who was just so very good at pulling everybody together and making it work.
Well, that's certainly refreshing to hear. And speaking of Order of the Phoenix, having seen this movie, how do you think it stacks up with the predecessors?
I think it stacks up very well. But I might be prejudiced. I think, for me, as a Harry Potter devotee, the film perhaps takes her themes just a bit more seriously. So the film is actually quite a serious film. It'll be entertaining for the youngsters, yeah, don't get me wrong, and amusing, but it has depth to it that I didn't feel the others had, from my point of view. But I know I'm very prejudiced in that. I think also it holds together very well as a film. You know, you sit there and you watch it. It doesn't sag anywhere. You don't think, oh gosh, you know, this is this two and a bit hours. Another thing is, it doesn't sort of jerk and wrench from one thing to another, trying to cover every part of the book. It actually has been well scripted so that it follows the themes through smoothly.
Yeah, and I was going to say that's probably one of the most difficult challenges in taking the book and making it into a movie, is trying to cover all the bases, so to speak.
Yeah, yes indeed. And they did very well. Of course, if you see the film, you'll find that they've combined some things, but actually as a result have made a more dramatic, sort of filmically dramatic event, as it were. You know, there's a sequence of fireworks, which is a combination of sequences in the book, which is just fantastic, and it really, you know, people get up and cheer when they see that, apparently.
You're probably coming from an interesting vantage point, being a composer, but also being a fan of the series.
Mm.
So that must be an interesting way to take on this kind of project from two points of view.
It is. It's very interesting, and it made it a huge event for me. I mean, it's not just about, you know, having done a blockbuster. It's about something I always wanted to do. When the first movie came out, I said, why didn't they ask me to write the music? Well, of course, they didn't know me, so they were they? But the only thing that's interesting is as a fan, I had to put aside some of my prejudices about how things should be done and accept that, you know, the film may go a different way from how I would expect it. In the end, I was completely won over by the way it was tackled, and I think it's, you know, it's worked spectacularly well. Although it missed out some of the things that, you know, I would have put in, but I think it was right in the end to do that.
Huh.
I had to struggle a bit with my own, you know, my own prejudices to start with.
Yeah, that's certainly an interesting viewpoint. It's not one you come across too often, because I would assume that, you know, if you're a composer, you take on a project, and it is for the most part a project.
Yeah.
You know, but when you're kind of closer to it, it takes on a whole new meaning, I suppose. But that's interesting points of development for sure.
I think it's one of the things that's important. I think that actually it's important as a composer to have a strong view about what they're composing for, but then somehow to give it up, in a sense, in favor of the director's view, because in fact I think the composer must follow the director. It's the only way you end up with a good score for the film.
If I were a director, I've heard so much wonderful work from composers out there that those I would trust, I would just turn it over to and say, let your imagination take over.
Yeah, I think that may be the case in some cases. With David, he likes to work very closely with the composer, and we always have done. So, in a sense, in some ways, he almost writes the music. I say that to him, you wrote the music. Although, I mean, I did write the music in the end, but he actually is very into how the music works, and I do my best work for him as a result. I think it's definitely a partnership.
That's terrific. And for you, how fun is it just to be able to dabble in a fantasy setting, musically speaking?
Great fun. Well, I have to tell you, it's tough, because in the end, you find that it's not as simple as you think. You know, I went on all sorts of fantastical routes with the music. I must have written, I sometimes reckon, 7 times as much music as is actually on the film, just to find my way around it.
Sure.
In the end, often it was a very simple route, or an unusual route, a sort of left-field route that would take you in the right direction. So, no, but it is fantastic, I agree. Fantastic, but also very sort of difficult and alarming at the same time.
Yeah, because I've heard sometimes what sounds simple may prove to be the most difficult.
Well, I think the problem with simple is you can see through it, so if it isn't very good, it just doesn't sound very good. You know, you can write something quite complex that sort of fools you into saying, oh, well, that's quite, you know, interesting or flashy. But if it's simple, it has to be good, in the sense it has to be true, I think is the right word. Let's have a truth to it, you know? Not pretending to be something it isn't.
No, that's a good point. It would almost like an honest way of coming through. And as far as the next movie, is the production team going to be following suit with this movie and moving on to The Half-Blood Prince? Have those discussions taken place?
I haven't been party to the discussions so far. But it seems that David is on as director. And, you know, I may well be on as composer, hopefully.
Oh, that'd be terrific. And
yeah.
I also would like to ask you, for those fans who may be new to your work, if you could give us just a brief introduction to your background as far as where you've come from with previous work leading up to this score.
Yeah. Well, I've been in film since about 1988, well, in television mainly. And I did start off with quite a lot of animal films, best of which was Land of the Tiger, which was shown all over the world, and I had a huge orchestra, and it's a great score to do. And then working with David, we did the Titchborne Claimant, which is a feature film. Working then in television, we did The Way We Live Now, The State of Play, which is a political drama, The Girl in the Cafe, which I think has been around America quite a bit, and The Young Visitors. With other directors, Philip Martin, I recently did Prime Suspect, which I think is probably well known in the States. So I've done quite a mixture of contemporary and period drama, which actually I think is quite good for doing Harry Potter, because, you know, there is a contemporary feel, but there is quite a classical feel to it.
Yeah, good point. And it's beyond Harry Potter. Do you have any future projects lined up that you would like to comment on or perhaps tell us about?
Well, I'm working on a film about Einstein and Eddington, which is a drama set, you know, in the First World War, and that's just very interesting to do a drama about that part of his life when he discovered the theory of relativity. It's a bit different from Harry Potter, but not totally, I suppose.
And if you could tell us, do you have any themes bouncing around in your head as far as thinking about that type of period and subject matter?
It's the themes are all to do with this building excitement to making a discovery. So that's what it's about. It has an onward energy to it, which is about Einstein finally discovering this idea and then Eddington finally proving it. So those themes are there. That's a bit difficult to say more than that, actually. I've only just started on it.
Well, I must say, it's certainly interesting to hear your thought process on how you develop the music and the themes. I personally find that fascinating, how a composer could take an idea and musically translate a theme out of it, and an intellectual one at that.
Yes. I think it's something I've always done. You know, I've always tended to... When I was little, I used to play with toy soldiers. and I used to imagine this music in the background that would be like the film music for a war film, you know, a devotee of war films. So I always sort of had music in the background of action, or I'd read a book and I'd have, you know, classical music on while I read it. And actually all that music has gone in very deep. But it was always with some kind of visual thing going on in my head, anyways.
Do you find that being a composer, are there any fragments of music that you store inside your head that you call upon somewhere down the road, like an idea or a seed or something you hum to yourself one day and then maybe an opportunity arises?
I think so. It's difficult to say because I often forget my hums and then they crop up later. I mean, I have a belief in the unconscious that actually this runs along like a river and you dip into it, and then if you get an idea but you forget it, it crops up again. You know what I mean?
Yes, I know exactly.
Another form. So that's one way I have of working. The other interesting thing I do find is that in my work, themes develop from one film to another. I don't plagiarize myself, but I get ideas in one film that I think, oh, that's great, and I can transform that into an idea for another film. You know, I'm all learning my technique all the time, and it's always growing and changing.
Sure. No, that's genuinely interesting to hear that, and I do want to thank you for taking time out on what is, here in the States at least, going to be premiere week for Harry Potter coming up.
Right.
And do you have any plans for premiere night where you're at?
So we're going to the premiere on Tuesday in London, and we're looking forward to that. We got our clothes and all, and we're really going to have a great time, I think, the party and everything.
Well, that sounds fantastic. And again, thank you very much for joining us today. I want to wish you the very best of luck with the score and all of your future endeavors.
Well, thank you very much, and I hope you enjoy it when you hear it.
I'm really looking forward to it. Thank you, Nick.
Okay, thanks, Tom.